and welcome to The Divined Comedy, the only Dante podcast you'll ever need, ostensibly. I'm Paul Cantrell.
I'm David Fountain.
I forgot how we do this. It's been so long.
It's been like a month.
I don't feel like I haven't seen you in a month of, just a month.
Yeah.
Not Sundays, just a regular month.
No, like 4 Sundays.
It's been, yes.
4.5 Sundays.
Ish, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as you recall, there are 28 days in a month, if we're counting by weeks.
Go on.
I'll tell you what. 7 days without doing this podcast makes 1 week.
Yeah.
Right?
And 4 weeks without doing this. There's no month.
Did you say month?
Month. I was trying to think of what rhymes with month.
We've both forgotten how to talk since we stopped doing this.
So it's been microphone pretty. I know that.
So longest hiatus so far, right?
Yeah.
And I'm already just sweating and my face hurts from laughing. Catching up with you a little bit beforehand.
Yeah, right.
You know, got to go off mic for some stuff.
Yeah.
A little, hey, how you doing?
Yeah. I mean, it's been – were you – you were out of town.
I don't never leave town.
Were you not out of town?
I don't think – you get out of town. You've been out of town more than me. I don't know.
I was out of town.
I went to Athens.
Yeah.
Went to Creature Comforts to see Coden perform there.
Right.
Fantastic band Coden. We've had Nasty Nate on the show before. We referenced some of these members who played in the wedding band
at Ruby and Paul's wedding.
Right. Forgot to mention Kara.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, who is an amazing, amazing, talented person who
absolutely
was integral in putting that band together. But Kara's fantastic, and she was there doing her thing. I took a bunch of photos and did that thing where I still need to give them all to them. I took like 39 photos.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, like you take photos of things, and you're just like, well, I'm just never going to.
Yeah.
I was walking around Oakland Cemetery recently, like, oh, this pretty photo. I'm never going to look at these things. Eventually, I'll lose my phone, or my phone will die, and it'll just never. It's just in the ether, you know, but I should get those photos to the people in the band.
A.K.A. the cloud. Kara, also my neighbor.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Great singer.
All come together.
Great singer. Good person. Great times.
Are you saying, wait, hang on. Is there, you know, this is an interesting thing.
Uh-huh.
Good and great.
Oh, okay.
Great used to only mean, it only would apply to like lineage.
Okay.
Like good would be a character value. But like Alexander the Great.
Uh-huh.
Not necessarily
it doesn't
a great
mean he's
guy.
Great?
Yeah, not.
What does it mean?
Empirically great. It just means it's like great grandfather.
Ephemerally great.
Like a mandala.
Wait, so what does that refer to, with regards vis-a-vis Alexander the Great? What does the Great refer to?
The Great just refers to his bloodline, and I think the purity thereof, or something like that. I don't remember this.
How was his bloodline?
It was great.
Okay.
Oh, man. It's been we'll see how this goes.
Yeah. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. And hopefully
– But is it going to be great?
Are you talking like modern definition of great?
Well, no. No, that word. We could probably get rid of that word after this term, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I was just going to say we have been recording afternoons.
Yeah, and coffee spoons.
This
is the first – you're right. Are we doing Dante After Dark?
I don't want to say that we're not.
Dante After Dark.
Nice.
This is the first time that's been literally true.
Yeah.
As far as I can remember. But
– let's see how it feels.
It's been very hard to figure out how to record a podcast when you have a baby.
Yeah. I mean –
because I can't bring – I mean like when she was like really little and she was sleeping 20 hours a day.
Yeah.
I could just hold her down here.
Yeah, I remember that. You did almost an entire episode with a baby Bjorn or some whatever brand you have.
Oh, right. Yeah, I was trying to get
an endorsement.
An endorsement.
Constantly
them.
Trying to get endorsements.
Don't remember what brand it was.
Creature Comforts. Holler at your boy. Got your boy drinking a Fulcrum Dry Hop Pilsner.
Yeah.
Brought it back from Athens for my man. Was going to give it to him on mic to preserve my – for all posterity, my largesse.
Mm-hmm. It's delicious. Do you want me to talk about what I'm tasting here?
Give me some tasting notes here.
All right. So this is a Fulcrum Dry Hopped Pilsner from Creature Comforts Brewing in Athens, Georgia. It is a...
No, don't read off the can. I want your personal subjective
impression.
No,
well, I'm looking for the alcohol content. It's a 4.3.
Oh, that's low.
It's 4.3.
That's sessionable, baby.
That's session. That's a session. Okay, here we go. I'm getting notes of There's some floral notes.
Sure. Coriander? No?
No.
I don't know.
There's no. No, this doesn't have coriander in it.
Juniper berries?
I'm tasting cardamom.
I'm allergic to cardamom.
I forgot to say I'm allergic to herbs de Provence.
He died doing what he loved.
Would you like a sip of this?
Let me see here.
That's a brewery can too, baby.
That's nice. You know what I learned today is that you can snap them in and out of place with those fancy newfangled plastic things. The six-pack holders.
Oh, yeah.
So you can mix and match. Because I'm a cheap bastard.
Yeah.
And I wanted to keep some for myself. Hey. I think you can only get this at the brewery, though.
Thanks for the beer. I appreciate it.
Got you, bro.
How do seabirds feel about the new six-pack rings?
Oh, I thought you were starting that off as a joke. Like, why is a raven like a writing desk? Oh, great. They love them. They're big fans.
Wait.
It's just solid plastic.
How is a raven like a writing desk?
No. This is one of those it's one of the things from –
But give me a second. Don't tell me.
No, there's no answer to it. It's like a Zen koan. Like sound of one hand clapping.
I mean, it just seems like it doesn't really make me think about a larger truth.
No. What does this? That's my one hand clapping. So the thing of it is – no, it's to get you to understand this. I'm so glad we got on this.
Okay. Okay. Great.
Okay. Michael Holquist.
Go on.
From, I think, University of Texas in Austin. Go Longhorns.
UT?
Yeah.
That's right. Hook 'em.
I was going to make a UTI joke. It's just not worth it.
No.
I'm sorry.
University of Texas at –
What's the town?
Irvine?
Is that in Texas?
It's in California, which is pretty close.
Probably. I mean, Texas is big enough. It's probably got a town called Irvine in there somewhere. I mean, it's just law of averages.
Michael Irvin. He was a wide receiver for the Dallas Cowboys.
So same thing. They probably named a town
University
after that
of
guy.
Texas at Michael Irvin.
My man.
Michael Irving. Sorry. I don't want to get –
I think you're good. I don't think anybody's good.
Hey, sports fans.
So he's got this great art. So I'm a big fan, as you know, David, Norton Critical Editions.
Love them.
I love them. They're good. They're great. They are fantastic books. I started getting into them in college and I guess even in high school. It's by W.W. Norton Press, and they have introductions. They have letters from the author. They have contextual,
Yeah, so, in college you gave me a copy of Sound and Fury.
Yeah, Norton I probably Critical. Did. Yeah. Sounds, again, that yeah. large S.
Yeah.
Might as well be Superman because of that large S right on the
– My man's got gravitas.
My man.
Oh, it's been too long. You think the French think gravitas is just like a little teacup full of gravy? That's sweet
just like
gravy.
Like a little mini cup.
Like a little gravy. It's not a gravy boat. It's like a gravy schooner.
It's awesome.
It's a little gravy dinghy. Oh, man. Take me to that cafe. So he's got this
gravy skiff.
Skiff. So he's got this great article called What is a Boojum? Nonsense and Modernism. And he's talking about the way that nonsense works. And it's a really people talk about Lewis Carroll and how, you know, like what's going on with that kid. And also like he's got the big acrostics thing because he's a mathematician and he's playing with language.
Hang on. Which kid?
Alice Liddell.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the one that is his niece or whoever, the little girl that Alice is based on. Yeah, like, all right, what's going on there? Right. You know?
I'm sorry. I was thinking C.S. Lewis.
No, he's good. He's great.
C.S. Lewis. Callback. Go on.
Oh, yes, Lewis. Oh, man, we've been doing this for such a long time. I thought you were telling him to cease. Cease, Lewis. That's enough.
Cease him.
I think you've written enough books, Lewis. So, yeah, it's the idea that, like, the way that nonsense works, and it's sort of absurdist in a way, but, like, if you were to have a computer diagnose somebody with brain cancer, the solution would be to chop off the head. And you can't really – like it's still a logical solution. It just doesn't really help you at all.
Okay.
So the idea that I think there's a moment where Humpty Dumpty is talking to – it's a fantastic book. I think this is actually Through the Looking Glass. Doesn't matter. Humpty Dumpty, I guess, is talking to Alice and he's saying I forget what the word is, but he's saying it means a nice knockdown argument. And she's saying, well, no, that doesn't mean that. I think he's saying the word power or something. And the idea is that – he can decide whatever the word means. It's not entirely arbitrary. I'm not doing a good job of paraphrasing this, but the idea is that it's hard to get something to mean just one thing and not a bunch of other stuff. So anyway, the way that the wordplay is working in this book and the way that he's kind of attacking the entire idea of semiotics – Anyway, it's interesting. Check it out. I think it was in Yale French Studies or something, but it's also in the back matter of that Norton Critical Edition book, if you're interested. Also got some more books on the way. They're in they're at my place, but I haven't got wouldn't be an episode without a date. That girl, your girl Teodolinda Berolini, I want to say, who did the Divine Pawn Shop from that episode we did last time, like a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that thing with Leviticus 27 and all that?
Yeah.
So she's got a book called The Undivine Comedy, which is kind of trying to de-theologize this incredibly theological book.
Okay.
So that's on the way. I think it's actually there. I just haven't gotten it yet because it's in the office or something. I don't know.
Right.
And remember the that cartoon we watched? The stop-motion thing with Nate?
Yeah.
And it was by the guys who did the – so is it Sandow Burke and Marcus Sanders? It was based off of their Book of Inferno. I've since gotten their copy of Purgatorio, and the Paradiso one is also, I think,
in the office. Is that the graphic novel?
Yeah. Well, holy, I mean, kind of. Shit. It's pretty awesome. It's not a graphic novel. It has illustrations.
Okay.
But to give you a taste of the way that they're – it's kind of like a modern day
is it a translation? It's a new translation.
Yeah, but it's – and they based – it was a really irreverent film that they made out of it. I'm almost positive it was based on that version of it. But if you remember – I wish I had the one for Paradiso. I'll have it next time or the time after. If you remember back in the beginning of Purgatorio, he's saying, now it's time for my little bark to sail across whatever waters.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sounds familiar.
He says, now it's time for me to paddle this little canoe of my keyboard toward calmer seas and leave the swirling waters of Shit Creek behind. I'll do my best to write about this second region. Don't worry. It's where the souls of the dead not condemned straight to hell are sent to purify themselves in the long climb toward heaven. I'm going to reach deep down to raise my rhymes up from the descriptions of death and hell in hopes that I may do justice to life and honor. It's a really good translation.
Mm-hmm.
It's current. It's, you know.
Yeah.
But it's not like a shock jock kind of thing. Like, it's not like cussing on the mic just to cuss on the mic, you know.
Right.
That's something I recently was rewatching Breaking Bad. And one of the things – I forget if we talked about this before or not, but just watching – R.J. Mitty's character,
uh-huh.
Walter Jr.
Walter
slash
Jr.
Flynn,
yeah.
Like his alter ego is Flynn, watching him just test the waters with profanity.
Cussing in front of his parents.
It's just such a great thing to – it's so true to adolescence. You watch him early on and he'll say like shit or something. You're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You can't, and then just if something bad happens, if he's being – you know, if they're explaining something to him and he's like – he gets really upset, he'll drop one in there. Just to see mm-hmm. if you – just to like, you know, just testing the fences, huh. You know, like the velociraptor.
I don't know that I've really noticed that.
It's good. It's just a very naturalistic touch to put on there. Anyway, what have you been – I've been kind of all over the place. I haven't really left town a whole lot, but I've been kind of like doing a lot of stuff, like taking a night here off of work, taking a night here off of work, pulling the goalie, getting out in the mix.
Yeah.
What about you?
Has
it been kind of either or, like you're either out of town doing tour stuff or you're here doing the Mr. Mom thing or what?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
That's a good way to describe it.
Fair.
Yeah.
But you just said that I haven't seen her because I think she's already asleep or something, but since I got her tonight. Uh-huh. But you just said when she was little, has she grown a lot like in the last couple of –
What did I say when
– You were saying like, well, when she was little, she used to sleep 20 hours a day. Like just
I mean, she's like four – what is today? She's like four and a half months.
Today is the third, I believe.
4.5 months?
Yeah. Well – That'll do it. At what point are you like out – well, not like out
she's
of the woods.
She's teething.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She's teething very early.
Oh.
She's
– precocious.
Very advanced.
When do they start walking? Like a year or something like that?
Yeah.
That's when the real fun starts.
Yeah. You know, honestly, like I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
I'm really excited for when she can just sit up on her own.
Yeah.
Because right now my life is – she can't just sit down anywhere. I have to hold her.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like when she can sit up.
The game changer, baby.
She can just be put somewhere.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah.
But what's to stop her from just falling over, though? I mean, come on.
Well, I mean, you know, like once you can sit up, you can also pick yourself back up.
Oh, fair.
I think. Maybe. Yeah, there's going to be a weird period. There's going to be like an odd period between when she can sit up and when she can walk, when she's just crawling and like mobile, but like
kind of that army crawl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. This is good podcasting.
Yeah, that's good. You're doing like kind of a, what would you call that? Like traveling in basketball that would you do one hand
yep.
over the other? Or like you're doing like a conga line kind of thing. Like you got your hands put into fists.
Yep. You're rolling them around each other. If you never put one arm up.
Yeah. Sure. There you go.
In the conga line. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Oh, I saw you today.
What?
I was driving in my car and I saw you.
Did I leave the house today? Yeah. Where'd you see me?
I saw you crossing. I don't know if this is good podcasting either. We're a little rusty. Coming down Glenwood, bro. Passing the gym. Heading toward Kroger. I saw you. I pointed at you. Give you a little my man. Good little point. But you were otherwise occupied.
Was I going east?
I guess. No, you were going west.
I was going west.
Yeah.
Coming to the house.
This is really not good recording, is it?
No, it's really
it's
not.
Fine.
Was this like 12:30?
This was 3:45 in the afternoon. Exactly. I hope I didn't just blow your alibi for if you're committing crimes.
No, shit.
Were you just in a fugue state? What's going on here?
I don't know. I mean, that's like parenting is pretty much just a fugue state.
Really?
Yeah. I think for the first like year or so, it's just like.
Just being so sleep deprived, I would imagine, right?
Yeah. I mean, like sleep's not even an issue right now. It's just monotony.
Yeah.
It's just every single day is, you know, you want to introduce some kind of structure and like a schedule and everything.
Yeah.
But 3:45, I don't know where I was.
I assumed that the kid was in the car with you. I don't know. I couldn't see.
There's a decent chance that she was at home and I was driving her around.
I was trying to go up to Boulevard and then leaving the grocery store. And then There were like three school buses and everybody got the same idea. Everybody just pulled a U-turn and went the other way. He's like, this is going to take forever.
Oh, okay.
So because that school had just let out. And then I went back and this guy stops me. In the road, I'm in my car. There's no one behind me, and lets out like 10 cars out of this parking lot for the school, which is fine. Like I get people get.
Wait, to about Maynard Jackson High School?
I kind of felt, I was kind of feeling like I was a little singled out. Like this guy was just like using his authority, which is fine. Do your thing, but then he lets me go, and he's stopping these other people, and there's nobody else. It just seems needless to me. Like I don't know. I'm not saying these people. I'm sure they do a great job, whatever. But it just reminded me of the reason I bring this up is that it reminded me of a trope that I think has been long absent from our cinema and our culture, and that is the sassy traffic cop. You know what I'm talking about? Where they're blowing the whistle, they're dancing, like shaking a little booty. Yeah, they got the white gloves on.
That feels like an 80s like police academy.
Yeah, police academy, maybe a little Ghostbusters.
I feel like that was the height of that.
Back when blue collar meant something.
Yeah.
No.
Go with it.
Snowflake-ish thing to say.
This is the nadir of sassy cop. sassy traffic cops.
So some terrible things have happened. I don't want to talk about any of them.
Oh, God.
But
what?
Just in general. Oh, you – sorry.
In life.
No, not for me.
I mean in the world.
Yeah, in the world.
Yeah, there's been some bad stuff.
Although, I mean, I just saw it today, so I just putter around in my little car and just I just listen to bossa nova music all the time now. Head in the sand, whatever, but I'm like the little guy in like Jonathan Pryce's character in the movie Brazil, where like everything's just going to hell all around him and he's just putting around his like got a little smart car and he's just listening to, you know, like Joao Gilberto and all that.
I do a lot of driving around hoping that Clark will go to sleep.
Or hoping she's in the car, apparently.
Yeah. Not gonna yeah.
No, it's funny. That's how I was put to sleep. I think that's how I was
R.I.P.
That's how I was put down. No, like just I just loved the car. I mean, when I was a kid, apparently I don't remember, but yeah, I just drive me around the block a few times. What was I bringing? Oh yeah, but Lois Reitzis apparently was awarded from Governor Deal, I guess. And my old, my former Georgia State professor from grad school, Pearl McCaney, who is a big Faulkner. So I talked about the that Eudora Welty essay that I got published recently in Mississippi Quarterly.
Right.
She was one of the people that encouraged me to do that.
Hmm.
You know, however many years ago.
Great.
So two great women being honored today. But it reminded me that I think it was yesterday, she had a great kind of preamble to City Lights, which I think Mike John shared.
Because
I heard him on the radio today because I guess he was filling in for her, which is putting all these things together.
90.1.
I happened to have the radio on when I was leaving to come here like a half hour ago and he was on there. And she basically said, you know, yes, there are horrible things happening. We're not doing this. We're going to talk about art now. We're going to talk about society and culture. We're not doing this to escape. I'm paraphrasing, but not to escape that or to ignore any of that, but because we think this is important and it's something worth discussing, you know. And so, because I don't know. I mean, it reminds me of like John Stewart's big kind of iconic speech post 9/11,
right? Yeah,
that was kind of the turning point for that show as well. Because I remember after Craig Kilborn, I was like, well, who's going to fill Craig Kilborn's shoes?
Yeah.
And then here comes...
Who can ever top that guy?
Well, he was good. I mean, I didn't really have any context. Yeah, it was like 20 years ago, but I never...
He was just kind of like a Dennis Miller ripoff, though.
It was fine.
Yeah.
He reminds me of Josh Homme. Is it
they
Homme
look
or is
very
it not,
similar.
Is it not Should it not be
It should be but I believe it's Homme.
Homme.
It's kind of a softer H.
Don't play that.
Yep.
Man.
Josh Homme, don't play that.
Oh, they're great. They've gotten me through some tough times, too. I'll tell you. So much to talk about. I really don't know. I feel like I've been doing a lot of stuff, but I don't know if any of it is anything I want to talk about on the air.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think about, like, we had some shows. We played on a booze cruise in New York.
Oh, God. You know, I heard that the person who invented the booze cruise works in the Jane in Grant Park?
Yeah, that's where the
Six-man, right?
Six-man, yeah.
I think, did they create the concept of a booze cruise?
They created the concept... Or they at least popularized the concept of the like the concert cruise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But nobody thought to add – I mean booze rhymes with cruise. How hard
right.
is it to –
Right. Well, I mean I'm sure like drinking on a boat. Like that probably
– I don't know if you can apply for a patent on that.
It goes back. There's dudes sitting on like a raft in the Nile just –
It's like you're
just
like
pounding
bruise. Ancient Mesopotamia, just like some kind of fermented grain. I don't know.
just getting messed up on the Euphrates.
Boat drinks.
Boys in the band of the boat drinks.
Yeah, he's from Alabama or Pascagoula or one of those two. I always associate him with the Florida Keys. Jimmy Buffett.
Jimmy Buffet.
Well, because we were talking about something else that's horrible that happened is that Tom Petty. Yeah. And somebody texted me today saying, oh, it just occurred to me he's kind of Florida's biggest musical export. And then I started thinking, well, who else is from Florida?
Mm-hmm.
Besides like Creed and those guys. Gloria Estefan, right?
Uh-huh, Miami Sound Machine.
Luther Campbell.
Yeah.
Also Miami.
Two Live Crew. Right?
Yeah.
So
Tom Petty's actually from Gainesville, right?
Yeah. Skynyrd.
Yeah, which is weird to me. I always think of them as being a – Florida's a funny thing. I'm going to piss some people off here. But growing up, I had no frame of reference for Florida except for it was where old people went to retire and Disney World was there.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
And now I've met so many people from Florida and they're like, no, it's completely different. There's like lower Alabama basically, the top part of the panhandle.
Yeah, the panhandle.
There's like the middle part. I don't know what you call that part. And then the bottom is basically just Cuba.
Yeah.
To hear my friends explain it to me.
Cuba and old people.
Yeah.
And Mar-a-Lago.
Mar-a-Lago is where your boy goes to – I just wanted to see if you'd let me call him your boy.
You saying my boy?
I'll take it back. Sorry. God, what a shit show. It's been a long year, man. God damn it.
Because
it was almost a year ago that I was in San Francisco watching the election, and it's been a month shy of that.
What is this? Is this October?
Yeah.
God.
You're like Mel Brooks. And he's like, this is 2013. I have so many appointments. I have to run.
I feel like when I was younger, on any given day, sure. I could say today is Tuesday, September 8th, 1991.
Yeah.
I don't know if that date happened on that year. But
wouldn't it be crazy if it did? You've got a 1 in 7 chance.
Yeah, no, it's not that bad. But now, like not only – like I guess the first thing to go was probably like the date, the numerical date.
Yeah.
And like now I'm kind of like, what month is this?
Wow. Well, it did just change to be fair.
Yeah, but I'm worried that in like 5 years I'm going to just be like, what year is this?
Well, let's just hope that Keeley's paying the mortgage, I guess. Cause
yeah.
Dude, it's the 10th.
Already?
Far out. What was I going to tell you?
My cycle.
Somebody said recently, they asked me what my birthday was, or there is something where like we realized we had the same birthday, and this person goes, whoa, what are the odds? I was like, about 1 in 365. And he looked at me like I was the biggest asshole.
One like, in 365.
These are literally the odds.
It'd be 1 in 365.25.
Oh, you yeah, had to one
you
on me.
Gotta get that, had gotta to get one that on leap me. Year. That leap. Gotta get that leap year in there.
Man.
My great grandfather was born February 29th.
Want a leap year? Rhetorical?
No, he was born on March 1st. He was just an asshole.
So he did
just a pedantic piece of shit. What time?
So that's your grandfather. So this is Clark's great grandfather, but not so great apparently.
It's like Simon and Garfunkel had a song where on the back of the album they listed the length of the song as like 3 minutes 90 seconds.
Oh, come off it, Garfunkel.
Because, like, Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know that was Garfunkel. Well, something about, like, songs over 4 minutes don't get played on the radio, so they're like, it's 390.
Oh, God. Get over yourself, Garfunkel. Sorry, that's just a fun name to say. I got no hate for our Garfunkel.
He seems kind of like it.
That's like a lot of the...
You know what?
I don't know.
I'm going to give him a pass.
It's like a lot of those like, reductress articles. They'll say, like... They'll just throw the word, like, Karen into it. You know what I mean? It's just a...
Reductress has some great articles.
Thanks for nothing, Karen. I don't think – I'm trying to – no offense to anybody. If your name's Karen, I don't really – I mean whatever. But some names are just fun to say.
One of my favorites is Be a Lady in the Streets, a Haunted Bell Tower in the Sheets.
Oh, man. Oh,
I just tried to click a thing, but I realized that I put it on airplane mode.
Oh, good.
To block notifications, but now I can't make sounds.
Oh, well, so it goes.
Guess
how
what?
Far into this thing are we?
We're like 26 minutes.
That's not bad. Let's take a break.
Welcome back.
Hello. Great. So
hey,
so we are we're talking about the idea of greatness. I'd like to. Stick with this for a minute here. Because
mm-hmm.
last time it was right after Labor Day, right? And now I'm here. I'm in my blue jeans. I got my favorite jacket. Busted it out. And finally a little chill in the air.
Where's the Hawaiian shirt?
I know, right? I had to retire it. I did bust it back out last week, though.
Okay.
I mean, it's still in play. It's like Chekhov's gun.
Yeah, I mean, it's warm-ish.
Yeah.
Outside, you know, like it can make them – yeah.
It's hard to – you gotta start to layer it a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, like an onion. Or like a nice spicy.
You can't wear something on top of a Hawaiian shirt, though.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's the problem. A jean jacket. What are you doing? Mixing styles.
Oh, it's cold at this luau. Get out of here.
So the last time we ended with I recited a poem, which is just a bad idea because now like I do this like at bars sometimes now. It's crazy.
You recite poems?
You get a couple of G&Ts in me and I just pull up poems on the I recently read the entire Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock to somebody at a bar.
Okay,
they just never heard it before. It was like, oh, let me tell you. T.S. Eliot, here we
go. Let's go into this. Who is this person?
Just a friend.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's just something I do.
You read it aloud.
Yeah.
What was
How else would I read it? To myself? That's not going to help anybody.
Okay, like what was their reaction to this? Were they like rapt with attention?
I think so. I mean, maybe they were just being polite. Who knows?
How long
I've done this before.
How long did it take?
I mean, I lost myself in it, David. Time stops.
I mean, I'm thinking about the book, like the version of it I have, and I'm realizing it's like thin and it's also
– The Love Song of Jeff Brubrock?
Yeah.
It's only – I mean, it's just the first poem though in that book. I mean, it's like,
yeah, right.
It's like a couple pages.
Yeah. The one I have is like paired with The Wasteland and some other things. And it's like – it's very –
Dover Thrift Editions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We got the same copy, baby.
That shit got me through college.
Yeah, you and me both. I still have my copy.
I still got mine. I have so many Dover Thrift $1. That's like the McDonald's value menu of books.
It's pretty amazing. I guess they just got all the common domain or public domain stuff, I guess.
Yeah, I would just go into the bookstore during college and just like buy anything that sounded interesting because it's like $1, maybe $2 if it's like – the complete works of William Shakespeare is a crazy thing.
No, exactly. No, it's fantastic. They're providing a valuable service.
Who are these people? These ad wizards.
What's funny is that – I don't know. It's in the way that it's – it doesn't – I think I'm going to stick with the positive thing. That it's getting it in the hands of people who don't have a lot of – like who are – you know, like broke college students. Here's a book. Just a buck. Just give me a buck for it.
Yeah.
There's another argument you can make that it devalues the book, but whatever.
I mean, okay.
Because there's still going to be like the $14.99 version or whatever.
Yeah.
But this is just the text. It's bare bones. There's no commentary. Occasionally there'll be like a footnote.
Mm-hmm.
I just realized saying something's valuable or saying something's invaluable. Invaluable is better. It's one of those garbage words though, like flammable, inflammable. Like what are we doing?
Right.
Why are we making it so hard for people to, you know? Is that a racist gesture to make it so that it's harder for other people to learn this language?
But doesn't inflammable – No, wait, that means it's able to be inflamed.
Yeah. They mean the same thing. They're garbage. They're fake antonyms, I guess you'd say. That sounds like an Andrew Bird song.
I wish I could just flip this table.
Don't do that. Remember the time you tried to do that as a bit and the thing actually moved and you know, the bottles went flying?
Yeah, and I knocked over an entire bar. Trying to make a...
Just doing a bit.
Just doing
just,
a bit.
Just pretending to Hulk out.
When bits go wrong.
So this poem in... I'm not going to... Well, actually, it will be funny if I try to read German. Erbst Tag is autumn day.
This is bad.
Herr, es ist Zeit. Der Sommer war sehr groß. So gross, like G-R-O, and then the little thing that looks like a B, like the double S mm-hmm. thing. That's the German. And I told you my man Andrew – or not Andrew. My man Edward Snow translated it. Lord, it is time. The summer was immense. Now listen to these other ones because this is what I did after reading Prufrock at the bar. Mm-hmm. Started comparing translations of this Rilke poem at the bar.
Oh, this is Rainier Maria.
Yeah, your Rilke. Boy. Okay, great. Lord, it is time. The summer was great. Lord, it's time. The summer was magnificent. Here's my favorite. Mister, it's time. Summer was awesome.
what is the name of that translation?
That's the winner. The name of that translator?
Yeah.
Let me see who that was. Hang on. I just closed the phone. Stephen Gerard Wagner or
God
Wagner.
God bless.
Yeah. I have to assume that he's also doing a bit, being cheeky.
Yeah.
Anywho, the idea of greatness – because, I mean, we're tiptoeing around the slogan, right?
Uh-huh.
Make America Great Again, MAGA.
I actually didn't realize we were doing that, but you are correct.
Oh, sir. Earlier when you were saying in its current usage and I was saying like, oh, yeah, like
– Oh, okay.
I thought that's what you were alluding to.
I meant modern.
Okay.
I guess.
Well, I mean, I'm just curious as to – because it means – like gross literally means large, right?
Right.
But it's a question of are you talking about size? Are you talking about like you were saying before, like greatness? We were talking about greatness in terms of like Alexander the Great.
Mm-hmm.
It could be – bloodline, purity of bloodline, whatever, in terms of some kind of right to succession. It could be a qualitative thing like, oh, yeah, he's a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this somehow is tied in with magnitude.
Pop, pop.
Yeah, it's a... I'm just curious about
I
it.
I want to, but I mean...
I don't know. I mean, we don't have to harp on this thing if we don't want to. It's a curious word to me because it means a lot
great.
Of different things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Alexander de Grossa.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
De Gross. We're also getting Justinian.
Yeah.
We're getting great, but we're getting Justinian. And I'm not talking about Bateman.
Uh-huh.
Wait, was it?
Justine.
Justine Bateman, but wasn't her brother named Justin Bateman? Or is it Jason Bateman?
Are you talking about Jason Bateman? Like,
I thought it was Justin and Justine.
You're talking about the famous actor from like Arrested Development.
I thought there was another one. There's not a – why would it not be Justin and Justine?
Because that's that's confusing.
Well, Jason and Jason, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Right. That's probably why their parents didn't name their daughter Jason. It's Justine and Jason.
Jason, if you're out there listening, Dave's just
– There's a guy
out
there.
He just doesn't have an open mind.
There's a Justin Bateman.
He's just like, oh.
I went to high school with a Justin Bates.
Oh.
Good guy.
Cool.
Good guy.
But was he great?
You know what? Yeah.
Nice.
He's a great guy.
Give it to him. Jason Bateman, I recently was watching that show Ozark, and my favorite thing to say about it was just, Bateman at his best, and just walk away. It's just a fun phrase.
Again, who are you saying this to?
Some words are just...
Who are you saying this to?
Like, oh, have you seen Ozark? Oh, you got to watch it. It's Bateman at his best, and just walk off. Just random people. I don't know. Just getting it out there, you know? Ozark producers, if you're out there listening, holla at your boy. This has been all over the road. I'm really fine with it, though.
It's a great one. I'll tell you what. All right, so we're on Paradiso 6. I wish that book that you ordered that's like a modern translation.
Oh, yeah. That would
have
been handy.
Had come early.
Yeah. It's there. I just didn't realize that it's...
Right, but I mean, like, I think there have been other cantos in the past that are more dense than this one.
This is historical. I even phoned a – I basically threw my hands up in the air last night because I'd read this weeks ago and we were going to do this,
uh-huh.
I think.
Yeah.
I revisited it last night. I had to phone a friend again. Giuseppe Mazzotta, help me.
Did you call Giuseppe Mazzotta?
I didn't call him like on the – yeah, but it was – I watched his lecture.
What would you – it's like, hello, is this Giuseppe?
Is this Dr. Mazzotta or Professor Mazzotta? I'd be respectful.
No, you wouldn't say, is this Giuseppe?
I wouldn't lead with that.
Okay,
no.
Great. So let's talk about something here. Let's talk about Confluence. Inferno 6 is a diatribe on Florence.
Oh, shit. You are
Purgatorio 6 is about Italy.
You're blowing my mind right now.
Paradiso 6 is about the history of the Roman Empire.
This is a good pull. This is a great pull.
Uh-huh.
You're blowing my mind right now.
So is that. So how do you feel about that? That's pretty much all I got. Yeah, it's like
wait, did you call Giuseppe Mazzotta and like get like notes? What, where are you pulling this from? Did you just notice this?
No.
Okay. Where did you find this? Where did you look it up?
The internet.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
No, like I mean, I read some notes. I'll tell you what.
That's impressive.
I've been doing cantos by going to the digital Dante.
Columbia, yeah.
And then instead of just reading the text, reading the commentary and then reading the text.
Oh, commentary first. That's smart.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that.
Because it kind of like that way when you're reading like this material that's like very dense.
Yeah.
You already kind of have some puzzle pieces in place.
Yeah. A little bit of a framework.
Yeah.
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 That's smart. I've been doing that. I need to do that because I've been doing it with the notes, like the Mandelbaum and Company notes.
Yeah.
But they're so specific that I just get bogged down. I mean, there's so many notes for this one. I mean, there's pages upon pages of notes for this canto. And honestly, it's we've talked about this before. We talked about this way back in the beginning of Inferno. I'm not that into the political stuff. I tried to do it originally until it got annoying, like the Guelphs.
Right.
I tried to do it just to kind of pay some lip service to people who were interested in that facet of the book.
Uh-huh.
It's not something that particularly interests me. Especially, I mean, it's interesting to me what he's doing, I guess, literarily speaking. Like he's taking Justinian, who was what, like a 5th century ruler or something? He's taking this guy and the emblem of the eagle, which has been on the battle, I guess the banner.
It's like if someone were writing the history of the United States and they used a bald eagle.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Or like some image, something, and you kind of trace it over the course of centuries.
Right. He's saying the eagle did this – or I'm sorry, not – yeah, the eagle.
Which is a clever device.
The eagle did this. The eagle did that. The eagle did this. And it's, you know, it's a stand-in for – the Roman Empire did this.
Yeah. And essentially it's still – I guess all of this is still framed with some kind of nostalgia, right? Like everything's – I mean and honestly, I mean I don't – I identify with it in terms of what we were just talking about in terms of Dante, for Dante right now, everything is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
He's exiled. The current pope is just a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels the only thing that he can do is write this thing. So I understand why.
It's like a vengeful nostalgia.
Well, it's also like there's this beautiful thing and just look at how it's been degraded over the course of centuries. And look at where we are now. How low have we fallen, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I get where the venom comes from. But it doesn't make it any more interesting to me. Just as for me personally as a reader, you know, it's a lot of it is because of how this is something that gets us. It's tripped us up a bunch of times before. Usually when he's talking about his neighbors, but very kind of elusive language, like with an A, like it's we're here just expected to know what the hell he's talking about.
Right. I mean, and that's just a failing of the fact that it's a 500-year-old poem.
Yeah.
You know.
No,
I mean,
exactly.
Like I don't think there's anything that someone could write. I mean, someone could write something that's very clear about what's going on in our country right now, and in 500 years, it would just be so boring.
Yeah, people would refer to like the orange one or something and be like, oh, who is this weird? And then there'd be like a footnote saying like, oh, it's this guy, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of it's just using epithets instead of using proper names. Also, like if you only use proper names, it would be kind of boring too. So I don't really know. It's kind of a rock a hard place thing.
Yeah.
I don't really plan – I don't know what people's expectations are at this point. I feel like if they've been listening long enough, they know that – at least where I'm coming at the poem from, I don't plan on getting into all the specifics of this. Do you? We can if you want to, but
– well, this is one of those cantos that – I mean Justinian is speaking the entire time.
Yeah. It's just a long speech.
It's a soliloquy. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean I think
– think about the – I haven't like had to use like literary phrases.
No. Yeah. Soliloquy is just like solo and then like interlocutor or someone's loquacious. It's the same thing. Just
He's basically like stepping up to the front of the stage, one spotlight, other lights go down, and he's talking about the history or the decline, the fall of the Roman Empire.
Yeah, that's a really good image. That wouldn't surprise me if they made a film version of the what did I say? The Burke and Sanders version mm-hmm. of parody. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's something like that. Honestly, that's it's funny you mentioned that. Isn't that kind of how they set up Ulysses in the movie, in the cartoon movie, where it's like he goes into a theater.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's Ulysses takes the stage and kind of gives his speech in a way, or there's some kind of like – there's some kind of pantomime in the background or something like that. But it's a very theatrical setup.
Yeah. That sounds right. I really hope those guys – I mean, I think there's less interest from the general public in the other two books of the Divine Comedy. But I would really enjoy seeing their take on it.
Yeah, it'd be phenomenal if I could get the same people involved.
Yeah.
Those are really we never really talked a lot about that.
God,
we
was
did it
so good.
We did it kind of late at night, and we were going to – because Nate was here, and we were going to do a guest episode. Uh-huh. And we were just like
– we're just really tired. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning or something.
Yeah, I just didn't really have anything left in the tank at that point. But it's phenomenal. We should – I'll plug it. I'll be better about putting this stuff up there. I feel like I put the trailer up at least. I don't think the full version's available.
It's really impressive.
It's phenomenal. Yeah. It's and honestly, it would take a ton of work to do the other two parts of the book, but just for completion's sake, you know, because I didn't realize that the translation that they translated the entire Divine Comedy. I thought they had just done Inferno until I found this on it's like Amazon.
Man.
So yeah. So I guess it's Dante. Justinian's addressing a question that Dante raised, and it took me a while to find it.
What was it? Because I don't know.
It's hard to – sometimes it's hard to figure out who's talking in this book. So earlier in Canto 5, just quick recap, at 109 there's an address to the reader. Consider, reader, what your misery and need to know still more would be if at this point what I began did not go on and you will unassisted feel how I long to hear those shades narrate their state, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, you born unto gladness whom God's grace allows to see the thrones of the eternal triumph before your war of life is ended – so this is somebody talking to him.
Yeah.
But it's set up in such a way where you think that he's – it's just very – sometimes
the dialogue like you've been blessed enough to still be alive and yet see heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the way that he sets it up, the dialogue tags just trip me up sometimes where I think one person's talking. Beatrice Leonard, speak confidently. Trust them as you trust God's. I see plainly how you have nested in your own light. See you draw it from your eyes because it glistens even as you smile. But I do not know who you are or why, good soul. Your rank is in a sphere concealed from mortals by another planet's rays. So Dante said that to him. I guess that's the question. Who are you essentially? And why are you concealed within another planet's rays? And then he starts in with Canto 6. You're right. He launches right into it. It's not like a – and then he said it just – opening quotation mark, after Constantine had turned the eagle counter to heaven's course, meaning that he moved the empire seat from Rome to Constantinople, right?
Uh-huh.
Which is – this is the strange thing that's – we talked about this before. The idea that things have to naturally go from east to west, this heliotropic thing.
Yeah, like the sun.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And that a man's life kind of follows that same arc. Uh-huh. So when he moved it back east, it's like, well, this is unnatural somehow.
Yeah, it's a regression.
Let me ask you this.
Wow.
We talked before about when I flew to California and back, and you were saying like, oh, it's like the curvature of the earth and it's the winds, right? Which direction is more natural in terms of the way that the winds want you to go? Is it a set thing? I don't really know how that stuff works.
West to east.
Well, see, Dante would hate that. It's a good thing he died before air travel was
– I could be wrong. I'm just thinking of like from here flying to – like flying to Europe is shorter going over than it is coming back.
Okay. Not because of any time difference though?
No. I think it's just because like I don't know how much of that is wind and how much of that is just the earth rotating.
All right. I was just curious because not that it would really – they wouldn't have any knowledge of that I guess at the time.
A flight?
This is an odd thing. He says – Caesar I was and am Justinian. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm pretty sure that Caesar is just a title.
Yeah, you're right. But when I first read it, I didn't – that
I couldn't figure out if he was saying Caesar the first, like Caesar one.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense too. Yeah. I think it would be – because Caesar was like – there was Augustus Caesar. There was Julius Caesar. Caesar was kind of like – it's like the Kaiser. It's or like the Tsar.
Yeah.
But for a minute there, I thought he was saying – I thought he was kind of alluding to like a fluidity of identity. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like there's one woman with many faces. That kind of way of thinking was just a little bit murky. But
I see. I read it as Caesar the first was, And am Justinian.
I guess, yeah, he's saying, like, I was the ruler, and I am Justinian. Like, here, I
Caesar
am Justinian.
I was.
Here, I am Justinian.
And
I don't have that.
Justinian, who. Yeah.
Because titles shouldn't mean any. I mean, he's in Paradiso at this point. He shouldn't. Yeah. He's, like, literally in paradise.
He's like, president I was, and am Millard Fillmore.
Which is interesting because you think back to the people that we met in Inferno, and it's the opposite. Where it's like titles are very important. Think about prideful people like Farinata, for example.
Yeah.
It was all about, you know, where are you from? Who's your family? What stock do you come from? That kind of thing. And here it's like, I'm just Justinian.
Yeah.
I'm just Inian.
I was the Caesar.
I don't like to talk about it, you know. But, it was a long time ago.
But now call me Justinian.
As he like pulls the chair around like preppy, like A.C. Slater style. Let's rap. So now I'm curious, does he just talk the whole time? Because there's some names that get dropped, like Belisarius, who was, I think, a general of his.
Cleopatra. Line 76. Because of it, sad Cleopatra weeps still as she fled that standard. From the asp she drew a sudden and atrocious death.
You sounded just then like if Harry Carey were doing like a Dateline episode. Cleopatra, line 72.
Charlemagne's in this 95.
Big dog. Yeah. Charles the Great was what that means. Charles the Magnus.
Ah, yes.
See, back to greatness. I think we got a title for this episode,
father,
bro.
His father, Charles Martel.
Charles the Hammer Martel, because Martel means hammer.
That's so.
And please, hammer, don't hurt him.
I won't, but my son will.
Because I'm naming him the Hammer. I had a friend recently who didn't realize, speaking of hammer, because there was a part of Perfect Strangers, they fell in hard times later on in the run, and they had to do a song and dance number, and it was just, speaking of being demoralized.
Was it the Dance of Joy?
No, that was earlier. That was a kind of gimmick, but they literally did a song and dance routine to You Can't Touch This. There's an episode of Perfect Strangers where they do this, and they somehow just shoehorn it into the episode for ratings, because I guess it was staggering or whatever.
It was the height of Mick Hammer.
Mick Hammer. Please, McHammer, don't hurt him.
Please, McHammer, don't hurt him.
But my friend didn't realize that Harriet Winslow was the elevator operator from Perfect Strangers.
Oh, does she get in on this dance?
No, she doesn't get in on the dance, but I'm saying she is – it's like, let's make a new TGIF show.
Yeah.
What about that elevator operator at the Bugle or whatever? Let's see what she goes home to. And that was Family Matters. And I blew his mind.
Yeah.
Explain to him that was a spinoff. Same thing Coach Lubbock from Just the Ten of Us. He was the coach on Growing Pains.
Oh, that's right. Wait a minute. He wasn't the coach. Was he the coach on Growing Pains?
I'm almost positive. With your boy Richard Stabone. We've talked about this before, right? How I named
Richard Stabone.
Boner.
Oh, yes. Boner.
We've talked about my gerbil before,
Started following Waldo Faldo on Twitter.
The actor? Or the guy who played him?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Because weren't you having – I totally forgot about this. Darius McCrary was kind of like hitting you up here and there, right?
Yeah.
He was in town filming or something?
Yeah. I ran into him at the gym.
Oh, that's nice.
Pumping iron with fucking Eddie Winslow.
I'd watch that TV show. I was thinking about an elliptical machine. Is that just a machine that just bangs out three dots at a time?
Oh, God.
The boys are back.
The boys are back. The boys are back. Oh, I know, man. People have been missing this banter.
Yes, that signature banter. Oh, here's a thing that Justinian does that's pretty cool, though. You probably – check this out. He comes up with a codex. Boys to Men?
Yeah. Isn't that
– Cooley High Harmony?
No, you know, in that song, Motown Philly.
Sure.
What's his face? Comes in and raps.
Yeah.
About how he discovered Boys to Men.
Who? The Basie guy?
No.
The guy's always like, listen, girl.
No.
The guy with the cane?
Yeah. Was he injured? No, it was – who was the guy?
It's a literal prop. You talking about Belle Biv DeVoe?
Yeah. Was that the guy who discovered them?
I don't really know what the origin story is there. It's not like the colonel discovered Elvis. I don't think it was like that narrative. I think they're all.
Well, anyway, in the song,
probably Michael Bivins.
It's Michael Bivins.
Sure.
In the video, they're like panning by, and he's sitting on a toilet, and he's like doing this like this spoken word thing about how like I saw these guys, they were singing these songs and it was really good. And then the tall one named Shawan said, "See how this hits you." And then they go, "Mm-da-da, mm-da-da, ay-ay-ay-ay."
Is this like some kind of extended cut?
No, this is radio cut.
In the song? There is some kind of – I used to stay up by my my clock radio with a tape deck, and which I still have to this
just
day.
Just waiting for Boyz II Men.
I would know. I was waiting for Boyz II Men because there was a radio remix that was just slightly faster.
Oh, yeah.
So amped, bro.
Yeah.
So amped.
But anyway, the way that you introduced whatever – the thing that you were about to read.
Yeah. Check it out.
Yeah, check it out.
Yeah, I was trying to. I was revisiting the flipping the chair around AC Slater style, like youth minister style. Like,
well, it made me think of Boyz II Men.
Let's rap about the Lord, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
that was when you saw a photo of Kenny Loggins, and you said that recently, right?
Yeah,
Kenny Loggins looks like a youth minister.
I lifted that whole cloth from from Pete Holmes' stand up.
Oh, the whole thing?
No, just the let's rap about the Lord when he's talking about how he looks.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's just like, I look like a. Like a youth pastor.
When you said that you lifted that whole cloth, I thought you meant like...
I lifted that whole cloth,
like
bro.
That loin cloth. Like you lifted the... Like when they say open the kimono, that kind of thing?
Peek behind the kimono.
I don't know what that means.
The grossest thing. It's like...
I don't know what's going on. So Justinian did a cool thing where he basically went in and updated a lot of the laws.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got me thinking.
Is that where we get justice? The word justice?
I don't think so.
Mm.
Justitia? We're going to meet – do we meet the Eagle of Justice yet? Was that in Purgatorio? I forget.
The Eagle of Justice?
Yeah. Fuck. I feel like we'd remember that.
That sounds super cool.
It's pretty dope, yeah. I'm going to assume we haven't done it yet. I feel like it's in Paradiso.
Caw-caw. Go on. I'm sorry.
Let me see here. He – it was like the I can't find the note. I don't know where it is. But basically, he took all the rules and kind of threw out the impertinent ones,
mm-hmm.
which has been – there's been an ongoing discussion lately about, you know, the doctrine that our laws are based on,
mm-hmm.
or on which our laws are based.
Oh, thank
and,
you.
And whether some of that might be outdated or what, you know, how would you even like talk about like Second Amendment issues?
Yeah,
talk about the idea of the Bill of Rights, the fact that. The very first thing we did was like, oh, hang on, we forgot about this.
And yeah,
it was like
yeah.
Pretty soon thereafter, you know, and now it's been 200 some years and it's like, no, like that stands. It's, I'm not saying that, constitutional lawyers, I'm sure we have a lot of them listening
mm-hmm.
and they're probably just, you know, not happy with what I'm saying.
I mean, I think there are valid arguments to be made. Like with the Second Amendment, there's, you know, did they actually envision the weaponry that we have now? And with like, even with like the First Amendment, there's no way they could have foreseen like the internet.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're thinking of like the most incendiary thing you could possibly do is to put out like a pamphlet.
Yeah.
You know, and address over time
yeah.
a certain amount of people as opposed to like a billion people instantly.
Yeah, true. Anyway, it just got me thinking that maybe, you know, just
don't get me started on quartering soldiers.
You're anti, right? You know, I almost forgot to mention – I had a whole list of stuff that I forgot to even look at before we started recording, but a list of stuff that was held over from the last time or the previous time or whatever. But there's one thing that I want to probably close out on here, and that was we talked about playing in the wedding band,
mm-hmm.
and there was a surprise that happened after that that we knew about.
Oh, God.
I want to talk about, David, your mariachi moment.
Oh, please.
Because there's a moment – because all of a sudden everybody's hanging out. Like, you know, DJ's playing. Everything's cool.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, in full regalia – comes a mariachi band, and they're on stage in the suits and the hats and the whole thing, and they just start crushing it.
Yeah.
For like an hour.
Yeah. Those guys and ladies absolutely tore the house down.
I could not
stop. They
were
incredible.
I remember just turning to everybody and just grabbing them by the shoulders like, I'm so happy right now. Like,
I could not stop
smiling.
I've never seen – the only context I've ever seen a mariachi band in – is like in a Mexican restaurant where you're hoping they don't come over to you because like it you're going to like get embarrassed in front of your mom.
You're talking like full group or you're talking like solo serenade?
Oh, no. I'm talking about like maybe like four or five people.
Yeah. This was like probably like a solid dozen people. It was
in a
impressive
on a stage.
They had that giant oversized
with a PA,
guitar.
Just with a bunch of like drunk people celebrating.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, it was like basically like a club, and they just brought it.
It was so good. It was amazing. I was dancing. Ruby's mom was like teaching me how to dance these fancy dance. I can cut a rug, but,
oh, sure.
Yeah, she was showing like dances with steps, you know, like, uh-huh. But there was a moment.
The Lambada.
Is that the forbidden dance? Yeah. When I was a kid, I always mixed it up with La Bamba.
Like, La Bamba, the forbidden dance. You can't do that, Richie Valens. What are you doing?
What is the guy? Lou Diamond Phillips.
Lou Diamond Phillips.
No, no, no.
It's verboten.
Oh, no, we both spoke German on this episode. That's weird. Pretty cool. But there's a moment where the band is going, and we got the microphones still left over from when we were playing. And so I see at one point that one of the mics doesn't have enough juice going into it.
Yeah.
So the other guy, like the kind of the ringleader, I guess.
Uh-huh.
The
El Cantador.
Yeah, indeed. He walks the mic stand over to this other guy on like stage left,
yeah,
so that his voice can be heard. Or no, he was holding the microphone by itself.
Yes.
The mic stand was still standing there. So I ran up to the stage. I grab the mic stand, start to walk it over to him, and he kind of like gives me one of these, like waves his finger like, no, it's cool. Like we got this. Just, you know, kind of buzz off, kid. I'm fine with that. I walk back to the middle of the room, turn around and start looking.
Guess who's not fine with it?
You are sitting on the drum throne just mixing the And it was great that you did it because you were like, they need to be heard and like, you got to get the mic levels right. And you're up there like with your like OK sign in the air like, is bueno? Is good? See? And you're just like grinning ear to ear like I've never seen. And then you stayed up there for like easily 5 minutes just like pretending to move knobs around. Just like insinuated
it's
yourself
like,
into
oh,
the situation.
Need a low-pass filter on.
It reminded me of there was a time when
on El Hombre, El Hombre quien toca la guitarra needs to be más alto.
And you're up there just like for anybody else's perspective, you're like, the guy's really like, he's like the sixth member of the band, you know?
But I'm just like, best seat in the house.
Exactly.
I had one taco today. And I think I had 6 margaritas.
Oh man, oh, it reminded me of at the time when the It's Elephants album release show with the Earl,
yeah,
like years and years ago, and there was a horn section, and the horn section knew exactly what the hell they were doing.
Uh-huh.
It's like, so Dave, you're gonna like count them in and everything, and like uh-huh. conduct them. You're like, you're goddamn right, I'm gonna count. It's like, they don't need this at all, but like it just looks cool.
I counted them in. I'm like facing forward, like playing guitar, and like I would just like hit a chord, and then like with one hand turn around and just like. Just like full on, like conductor, just like give them like a 4 count. Oh,
they were such good sports about it because, like, they don't need that. Like, it's like,
I don't know, man. That saxophone player definitely needed it. He was wasted.
Your boy John Sparks didn't need it, though.
No, John Sparks did not need it.
No.
John Sparks is on his game.
Exactly. Oh, man. I am.
What's up, John?
Oh, man. It's probably time to wrap it up, I think.
Yeah.
We kind of talked about the book some. It's fine. Next week, I'll try to remember. I'll bring in
next week, Berg maybe the canto will be more entertaining.
I think it would have to be. Ayo, shots fired. Just kidding. Yeah. All right, we're going to get out of here. Our theme song is Hell on You by An English Place. Thank you for listening. I am Paul Cantrell.
I'm David Fountain.
And we'll see you in hell.